takes me the long. Lady, I'm your knight in shining armor, and I love you. You have made me what I am, and I am yours.
I'm gonna leave it with this one. It's all about next week, same place, same time. It's all about the positive vibe. Keep your line up.
To my man Pro V.
All the way live from University.
Damn, Montreal.
On CKUT.
Nobody doing better, dog.
90.3 FM.
Gone. CKUT in the place to be from the bottom to the TOP.
This program is uncut. It contains strong language and some adult situations. Discretion is advised.
All the way live radio, CKUT 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday from 3 to 5. This is Pro V. Gonna be playing a whole bunch of sampled music today. Gonna get real busy on the turntables. Feel like getting into some old loops and letting people know kind of where it came from without saying anything, if you know what I mean. So, gonna be hearing some music from Dorothy Ashby, The Blackbirds, Aaron Neville, Bill Conti, the Charmels, Galt McDermott, Hamilton Bohannon, Ramsey Lewis, Dave Grusin, the Crusaders, Bobby Humphrey, Bob James, and a whole lot more. So, gonna get right into it. All the way live radio, CKUT, 90.3 FM, every single Wednesday, 3 to 5. Hope you enjoy the show. Let's get into it. Peace.
CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, and on www.ckut.ca on the World Wide Web. News, interviews, and music featuring the voices of prisoners, their allies, and supporters. Tune into the Prison Radio Show on the fourth Friday of every month between 11 a.m. and noon, and every second Thursday of the month between 5 and 6 p.m. To get involved in Prison Radio, or if you need to access past programs, email prison@ckut.ca.
Yes, rehabilitation.
I wonder if you know what the word means. Do you? It comes from the Latin root habilis. The definition is to invest again with dignity. You consider that part of your job, Harvey, to give a man back the dignity he once had? Your only interest is in how he behaves. You'll conform to our ideas of how you should behave.
Number, you weren't a man, you want to be a human. I wasn't Jim Crow, and hell, I was number 586.
Why do you do a warder's job?
It's a good job. Responsible job. Officers like myself trying to...
Scum.
We're only enforcing the law.
The law. When they hang my husband, is that just...
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show. My name is Candace, and I'm your host for today's show. Today, we are airing poetry related to abolitionist intimacies. Abolitionist Intimacies is a new book by L. Jones that examines the movement to abolish prisons through the Black feminist principles of care and collectivity. L. Jones spoke at Librairie Racine this past Saturday. You may know her as a poet or journalist or professor or activist who lives in Halifax, Nova Scotia. She teaches at Mount St. Vincent University and was Halifax's poet laureate from 2013 to 2015. She is also the author of Live from the African Resistance, a collection of poems about resisting white colonialism. Since 2016, she has co-hosted a radio show called Black Power Hour on CKDU FM, our sister station in Halifax, where listeners from prisons call in to rap and read their poetry. So we are going to hear some of L. Jones's very own poetry and an excerpt from the book, Abolitionist Intimacies. But first, we're going to hear from a couple of local poets here on the Prison Radio Show. They also spoke at the launch event at Librairie Racine. We are going to hear from Dina Smith and Ricardo Lamour here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Today we are blessed with the presence of two Montreal-based poets, Dina Smith and Ricardo Lamour. Dina Smith is a Montreal-based poet, performer, and teaching artist. Her work is based on her experiences and perspectives as a fifth-generation Canadian daughter, wife, mother, and bilingual person of African descent. Dina facilitates creative writing, poetry, and anti-racism workshops for participants age 4+. Her work has been published in Great Black North, Contemporary African Canadian Poetry, and Montreal Sarai Magazine. She is the director of the Ile Ife Africana Studies Collection and is actively seeking publications of several children's books. So, Fernwood? I invite Deanna to take the stage.
I was really looking forward to this because I am a great admirer of L. Jones as a person and as a writer. And thinking about the situations that lead to all things related to police brutality and incarceration, the narratives that are out there about us are interesting and far-reaching. So I'll start with this. Une belle journée ensoleillée. Disons qu'on était un lundi, parce que je me rappelle pas exactement, mais je me trouvais dans le stationnement du marché tôt. J'y faisais mes épiceries, pas du tout freinée par l'été, autrement dit, ça allait bien. Soudainement, de nulle part, elle arrive.
Je comprends pourquoi vous vous battez.
Elle m'annonce. Je me retourne. Je m'attendais à voir Ashton Kutcher ou la gang de gaz. Personne. Elle continue.
Je comprends pourquoi vous êtes enragé et je suis d'accord.
Elle avait l'air sérieuse et très sincère. Mais je me demandais pourquoi elle s'insère dans ma journée toute plaisante. Pourquoi, sans préambule ni invitation, je suis devenue témoin de cette manifestation contre tout ce qui pourrait me déranger, mais qui en ce moment ne m'agace aucunement. Elle poursuit.
Nous aussi, on a dû se battre contre l'oppression au Québec, les femmes. On devrait s'unir, les femmes et les noirs, pour atteindre nos buts.
Autour de moi, la bienheureuse journée s'effondre. Le ciel, le bleu du ciel coule, l'asphalte sous mes pieds brûle, une marécage d'émotions tourbillonnantes tente de m'engouffrer. Les mots de Sojourner Truth sonnent dans ma tête. Ain't I a woman? N'ai-je pas corps et cœur et âme comme elle? N'ai-je pas le droit d'être en congé des fois, de ne pas en penser? De ne pas porter le fardeau des siècles sur mes épaules en plissant les yeux dans le parking. Et ça, en me faisant déshumaniser par quelqu'un qui est disparu avant que je puisse même répondre. L'interaction s'est passée comme bien d'autres. Inattendue, non provoquée, me laissant blessée dans son sillage. J'imagine qu'elle se sentait bien, fière même d'avoir soutenu la cause. Je suis rentrée chez moi sans la moitié des choses sur ma liste. Il fallait que je me mette à l'abri de ses bonnes intentions. Dr. Cornel West said that justice is what love looks like in public. So I'm sending love to the boy I met at 4, whose family was falling apart, whose home was the chorus of a hip-hop song, and whose typical response to any new thing was anger. Why not? New things brought trouble, brought removal, brought loss and grief. I am sending love to the woman I met at 54, who was raising her great-grandchildren, successive generations of her family caught up in hopelessness. Alas, smoked a joint to take the edge off. It was laced with so much angel dust that it took her mind off, and she never came back. This woman's back was bowed from carrying everyone else. How could something not get dropped? I'm sending love to the social worker who first told me that hurt people hurt people, and to the reverend who asked, "So you wanted to hurt someone and the only person you could reach was yourself, huh?" Their quiet wisdom offered jewels that still shine, and their resistance makes space for wholeness. I'm sending love to the teachers I've seen bring food from home, to the kids in their class who never eat in the morning, who barely ate the night before, who just barely eat, hunger raging under the bright lights of a wasteful city. Their desire to fill bellies and hearts fills minds at the same time. I'm sending love to the preschool circle time that offers space to the child who's never heard, barely there, for fear that any sound they make may invite the wrath of an undone parent. Their melodies resonate in the soul and elicit smiles, one wheel on the bus at a time. I'm sending love to the boy in the car who was told to just drive, who only wanted the speakers, who didn't know anything, whose presence made him accountable for everything that the smash and grab destroyed. Bad decisions are easier when good choices are not available. I'm sending love to the sister whose boyfriend said it was just this one time, it was just this one guy, it was just this one favor, not forever, when it was really the beginning of everything. May your body and soul find each other again, the latter having departed in search of peace. I'm sending love to the drivers, minding their business, on their way to do business or pleasure, caught up in the quotas, the stereotypes, the duplicitous nature of power, you don't look like a suspect. You didn't roll the stop. I understand why your breath is shallow, even at 10 and 2. I'm sending love to the bench, the cell, the yard, the court, the halfway house, the hallway, the group home, the shelter, the bar, the car, the home, the dorm, the park, the place, into every space where unreasonable reasons may find folks at the gaping mouth of the machine being sucked into the system. May love precede you, and may you find justice there in spite of everything. I'll just do one more. Thank you very much, Marlene, for inviting me to be here. How is it not deliberate? The inherent nature of incarceration. How is it not just a manifestation of a certain kind of tribalism? An us versus them, the them in this case being us. Why would we trust in a system based on the purported wisdom of folks who never saw us as people, far less equals if they saw us at all? It's not that hard a call to understand why we would not be a fan of packaged law and order, but rather of truth and justice. Come, badged philosopher, explain to me how your epistemology is affirming you earning public money only to protect a portion of the people. And so it goes. Well, if he didn't, then they wouldn't, but they always, so he does. An appearance is everything, but nobody can really see. Get the guns off the streets seems a legitimate answer. How many have said that to the gun manufacturer? Ending gang activity seems fair to mention, but how they start is the necessary question. The problem of crime is largely created. Study after study has shown poverty, lack of opportunity, and exposure to violence perpetuated and exacerbated by municipal, provincial, and federal inaction and silence give us what we have today. What we want to know is, when will the age of the cage end? And when will the beginning matter? Shatter the family, the shaken soul of the community, then shake heads and hands with the devil about proposing urban renewal. It's straight out of a comic book villain's grand monologue, except the pages contain our futures, and the writers never take credit for their master plan. And again, right wings take flight against blighted homes and neighborhoods, but never responsibility for the plans that blighted them. And then more presence is required when the wood-fired rustic pizzerias arrive on the block and block the former residents, the them. But this is not evidence for them. This is progress. See definition of gentry, us. We don't have to guess where it will go. We just have to stop it from happening. Everyone in their own way, even the poets, one word at a time. Thank you very much.
Ricardo Lamour is an artist, columnist, and community activist. He has also released albums, acted in films, and appeared in documentaries. His writing often addresses racial justice and anti-Black racism. His work was published in Pivot, Ricochet, La Presse, Nouveau Projet. Lamour also actively mentors the collective Bout du Monde, which consists of five Black youth that occupy cultural, physical, and political spaces in order to transform them. Bout du Monde was founded 7 years ago with the goal of creating environments that nurture the genius of Black youth. They recently collaborated with the Canadian Museum of Human Rights for the revision of its Black content. Lamour provided analysis and advice on anti-Black racism to actors in the philanthropic community and political ecosystems, took part in key efforts to address the censorship of Black voices in the arts in Quebec, and has contributed to the Montreal adopting of a motion recognizing the United Nations resolution for the International Decade for People of African Descent. The CRTC recently ruled in his favor regarding the usage of the N-word by the French services of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, And although CBC CRC is appealing the decision, they have issued an apology to Ricardo Lamour. So let's welcome Ricardo.
I want to start by thanking Elle, because this summer Elle saved my life. And right after the decision of the CRTC that ruled in my favor, I faced major backlash in Quebec, while many so-called organizations that were supposed to maybe speak some truth to power decided to remain silent, and some even saying to me, well, you're kind of socially dead, so we can't really say something. When the CBC, SRC will appeal, maybe it will then mobilize. So I had to go get support in Halifax from Al Jones, from Desmond Cole, while organizations in Montreal remain quiet. I think that's brutal. I think that's crazy. And I think we need to find ways to stand in solidarity somehow, just checking in on people, knowing if they're still breathing. I remember at some time, maybe it was around 2015, 2014, you'll correct me, Elle, but you were supporting an incarcerated brother, Adam Cromwell. You asked for support letters for this brother, incarcerated for murder. And this is what, at the time, I wrote. Spirits up. Keep your spirits up. How shall we help you keep your spirits up? You are us. We are you. So spirits up. Spirits up, Mr. Cromwell. Keep your spirits up. Aiden. Queen L told me about you, Aiden. Been also reading about you. Kid with mixed heritage. Victim vilified violently, put in a cage. Spirits up. Breathe. Keep your spirits up. From Montreal, Quebec, king in dark office behind desk, reflecting and writing to another king, keep your spirits up. Because only 20 years old, may the truth unfold and take the justice system by storm to destroy what is thought to be the norm. You never meant to kill, may the universe heal the wounds of the soul that feels troubled by a world that makes him feel too old. Nurture your soul. Nurture your soul to articulate your perception, because others may join you due to the way that the system is molded. Your spirit can travel beyond the prison walls, beyond the system's wrongs. Your being fulfilled and strong. It does appear like we should appeal for the truth to appear. We keep you in thoughts and spirit. Promise to keep paying hope a visit, and then you'll see. And when you'll see hope choke, tell it it has no right to be diminishing, because we need him to occupy space in the prison system, where too many kings are treated as criminals instead of victims. This is a piece I wrote today. At first, I thought it was some piece of paper, some piece of media article. As I came closer, I realized it was a crushed bird mashed up with the cement. Lots of crushed birds. At first, I thought it wasn't about my story. Then I realized that all the elements of the story are mine. He was the same age as me. He just had more food in his fridge. His sister showed us his intimacy, showed us the place that the authorities invaded. You wanted to live. Thank you.
You are listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CQT 90.3 FM. Broadcasting from Joe or Montreal. You are listening to Abolitionist Intimacies, the book launch event that took place on Saturday at Librairie Racine. You just heard Dina Smith and Ricardo Lamour, and we are going to hear Elle Jones next. Elle Jones is the author of Abolitionist Intimacies. She says it's a fancy title for love, ultimately. It's a book about love and the work of prison abolition and human connection.
In the context of prison industrial complex and what Joan calls carceral intimacies enacted through coercive power and abuse, Elle Jones offers the counterpractice of abolitionist intimacies characterized by love, care, healing, forgiveness, insurgent acts within and outside the prison walls. Throughout this book, the author and poet generously articulates what it means to engage in ideas of intimacies for articulating relationship to state violence at different carceral sites, from prisons to borders to hospitals to social work. She reminds us that abolition is a global project that includes the fight against militarization, homelessness, poverty, and gender-based violence. Elle takes the project of abolition away from institutions and academia and back to grassroots organizing by centering the voices of victims of state violence. She reminds us that prisoners and victims are not separate people and that prison abolition is indeed a feminist issue. Elle turns to living archive, recovering what is lost, erased, and buried by refusing to forget those we have lost to state violence, to prisons, to banishment. She argues that abolitionist practice can't be limited to a theoretical act, but must be supported by actions towards our collective liberation. Abolitionist intimacies responds to the urgent need for abolitionist literature centered on the Canadian prison. As a Black feminist engaged in work and abolition work in so-called Canada, this book recognizes the value of abolition work in spaces beyond academia, where abolition organizing happens every day, particularly those created and nurtured by the labor of Black women. This type of abolition work lives in our communities every day and manifests through our refusal to forget, to banish, or to dehumanize those confined to prison walls. I'm going to give you some space to share some part of your book.
All right. Good afternoon. Peace, everybody. Thank you for coming out. Say peace back to me. Peace. I really want to thank Dina and Ricardo for that absolutely beautiful opening and the so much care that was taken into choosing pieces to fit today. So thank you both. What an honor. It was beautiful. This poem comes from the Black and Indigenous lifers who asked me to write a poem about their experiences of juries. One white, two white, three white jurors. Four white, five white, six white jurors. 10 white, 11 white, 12 white jurors. It's an all white jury again. Gerald Stanley walked out of the courtroom, a free man. Shot fire through the window of an SUV. He said he was just defending his land, a hang fire. He said, just a twitch of his hand. The life of Colton Bushy, worth less than the alleged theft of an ATV? What was he doing, was all they debated on TV. Shot to the head while he was lying there asleep, and so the Indigenous youth was the only one found guilty. And there were comments that he deserved it in a secret Facebook group for an RCMP, and a group of Saskatchewan farmers, of course, they all agreed, and the publishing companies offered him exclusive book deal at jury pool. The jury pool. It didn't look like me. And there are hundreds of thousands of dollars donated to his GoFundMe. Oh, Canada, where Indigenous lives still fetch a bounty for one little, two little, three little. Raymond Cormier walked into court and walked out. Killing an Indigenous girl equals reasonable doubt. The only person on trial was Tina Fontaine. The Globe and Mail headline said there were drugs and booze in her veins. The cops hired her to stop and they waved her on through. Just like police asked Colton Bushy's mother if she was drunk when they delivered the news. And the jury pool. It didn't look like you. And while Stanley and Cormier are free as a bird, Adam Capay was held 4 years in solitary until the time blurred. By the time the ombudsman got to him, he was slurring his words. They said they forgot him and what even occurred. They say that's an accident, but haven't you heard? In federal prisons, indigenous women make up more than one-third. And over half of the juvenile facilities and the majority in care who are taken from their families and just take a walk through maximum security or take a look around remand and who can't afford the surety. And they locked Renee Acabee away into obscurity, but then they tell me what is the equivalent of purity. And since we can't be innocent, we should bow to their authority. We can't win. We can't win. Not when session is in. Not with histories upon histories of savages and sin. If you'll all rise for the jury, the court will begin selecting one white, two white, a white jury. You can dress as sexy Pocahontas if you want for Halloween. And Brad Barton was acquitted of murder in the first degree, while Cindy Gladue's vagina was displayed in court for all to see. John Wayne is still an icon of the silver screen. Birth of a Nation's been a blockbuster since 1915, and is gated communities where black folk are never seen. When they stop us on the street, they say, that's just routine, and my friend walked into court under a portrait of the Queen. Well, I tried to buy him suits while the cop showed up in jeans. We worried he'd look guilty if he wasn't cut so clean. They couldn't show any evidence to even place him at the scene. When it came time to read the verdict, you all know what I mean. Thanks to one white, two white, all white jury. And the media, well, they said from his face, they just knew he couldn't feel. And now the system tells him that perhaps he can appeal. But on the appeals court, there's one white, two white, three white judges. We can't win. We can't win. Not once they see a black skin. And once the door locks, no one can see what happens within. They claim you can try a habeas in court, but then the institution spins. And who'll believe a criminal and what they have to say? And now my friend's been there on lockdown for 23 hours a day. And the phone calls only come when your family can pay. When they have you down in SEG, the phone doesn't come around at all. My other friend broke his leg, and for weeks he had to crawl. And a third been on a hunger strike, 3 weeks behind those walls. They spent money on more weapons, getting the guards some pepper balls. We claw our way into the halls of justice, but our voice is just too small. We can get one or two more judges, but they still write the laws. A guy tried to slit his throat, and they just wrapped him up with gauze. They released a woman to a bus stop in the winter and said, that's just protocol, just like Neil Stoneshut and those Prairie Starlight Tours. And there's another woman who set herself on fire. But when you die in a prison in my province, no one has to inquire. No charges pressed for guards who watch Ashley Smith expire, but when prisoners hit the stand, it's then they call the liars. Shot by the police in 21 seconds. Freddie Villanueva executed because police said they felt threatened. Sammy Yateem shot on a streetcar when he'd already dropped his weapon. But if a cop guns down a black man, he never has to reckon. We can't win. We can't win. The not guilty verdict is in. Because it's one white, two white, three white jurors. Four white, five white, six white jurors. 10 white, 11 white, 12 white jurors. It's an all-white jury. Again. I'm going to one more poem, and I'm going to read you a bit of my prose, and then we'll end the poem, and then we'll talk. Okay. This is another poem from the men, actually. Oh, sorry, I also have to give you the notes. SHU is the special handling unit. It's actually just at St. Anne's of Plain. It's the Supermax. Donald Marshall is a famous wrongful conviction case in Nova Scotia of a Mi'kmaq man who was wrongfully convicted for killing a black man, Joe Seeley, and served 11 years. Glen Assoon is another wrongful conviction case in Nova Scotia as well. I know a man who stabbed a man inside and got sent off to the SHU. But he says when somebody comes after you, then what else do you do? I don't believe that he's a monster, but that's what the system says. And now he's doing double life and might not see the light of day. And when you're 15 and your family teaches you to sell crap, in society we label as disposable. When you're already doing time, shouldn't be the first time you're diagnosable. And so we put them in a prison where at least they are controllable. And I suppose it isn't notable. And no one gets emotion. Unless we find out that they're innocent, then maybe humanity is negotiable. But for the rest, you did the crime. So your humanity's ignored. And men are in so long they don't know how to use a door. And men are in so long they've never heard of Internet Explorer. That's what happens when you're black, when you're indigenous or poor, when you're considered to be criminal before you're even born. I get an incoherent call at 3 o'clock in the morning. The same guy who called me crying to report he was assaulted, he says he's locked up in his room, surrounded by guns and knives. If they come to take him back, it's either his or their lives. He said ever since he left the prison, he's been numbing with a hive that people say to close his mouth because it doesn't happen to real guys. I suppose it's ironic. He's from the same reserve as Donald Marshall. So it seems to me that justice there was only ever partial. When we look back at that case and say those 11 years were awful, but for everybody else, the same suffering is lawful. I've heard so many tragic stories, I could almost take off a box, but still, we call it justice once the prison doors are locked. We believe that punishment comes to the people who deserve it. But punishment mostly comes to the people who can't swerve it, can't avoid it, can't employ it, can't voice it, can't afford it. And then once you go to prison, whatever happens, can't report it. So we talk about wrongful. But what are the rightful convictions? Sure, there's Paul Bernardo, Clifford Olson, Robert Pinkton. But what about the man on his 50th charge of shoplifting, when it's obvious to everyone the problem is addiction, and the Truth and Reconciliation Commission could only be a fiction as long as Indigenous people are still filling up the prisons? I have a hard time seeing justice as a reserve without a well, but then we bring its children, a smudge kit, in their cell. Don't we wonder what will happen when there's foster kids living in hotels or black children in the principal's office 5 minutes past the bell because they never learned to read and they fell between the gaps? We start with zero tolerance by the time they're done taking naps. Is it justice when some people start the race ahead by laps in a country where we can't even guarantee clean water from the taps and there's Indigenous land under every prison on the map? And as you move up from minimum to medium to max, it's a funny thing in Canada how the skin just gets more black. And that lack of access to parole, that is kind of like a tax, a couple years of extra sentence they tack onto our backs, and there's those weapons laws they pass that they claim are for the gangs, while there's white supremacists in prisons with KKK upon their hands, and there's guards who give them daps. And the police can gun down teenagers and never hit the stand. I won't even get into asking why we never charge the banks, but should anyone be sent to where they have to carry shanks? I watched police roll into Ferguson with snipers riding tanks. I don't believe you have to not have done it for justice to be miscarried. When I've known men so long in prison that their babies now are married. Hell, I've known men so long in prison they first meet their son out on the range, and I don't know that it is justice if we decide you can never change. And I don't know that it is justice when there's men inside a cage, and I don't know it is justice if the scales will never budge, and men in prison with so much legal knowledge, they could be a judge. And maybe they could have gone in that direction if they only got a nudge. And it's true. I have known men who did a killing for a grudge. But does 3 seconds of your life make you only human sludge? And let's not talk about the corporations, the profit off it all, like the predatory phone companies gouging prisoners for a call. Woman going broke when a man's conviction's not her fault. I could talk about the scammers and how many hits are false. Families turned away after driving up for hours because I don't know that it is justice when it's so easy to abuse powers. I could talk to you for days. It would all be the same ruin, and I know men who did their time down in prison with a soon, but they'll never be set free to share their voices in these rooms. And I know lawyers, guards, or judges who do their best to change the tune. But in a society that's broken, that's like reaching for the moon. And I confess, I once believed that every person could be saved. And it took a couple of years, and it's true that I got played, and I had to face that there's some people who who seem to want to dig a grave. But I still don't believe that they deserve solitary just because they misbehaved, and I still believe we can do better, and we have to find a way. And I'd still rather know I tried, even if it means I failed, because it never will be justice, while our solution still is jail. So from the people doing time in Kent, down to people in the news, from the people in the county, up to people in the shoe, if that was your life story, what do you think you'd do?
L. Jones here on the Prison Radio Show on CKUT 90.3 FM in Jojiage.
To hide, you just gotta understand.
It is here to be unbound.
What you want, I got it. Whatever you need, I'll get it. You will go mad if you let it. The life outside, just forget it. And call me.
Look us, look us.
I'll hook them up with anything that they want. Pull me anywhere and I'll survive. I don't mind it so bad right here on the inside. On the inside.
Gotta hide your tears.
You gotta learn how to fight for your life. Somebody here's gonna make you their wife.
Oh, one day we'll be free, one day.
Inside by Prison Dancer, which is an online musical web series inspired by a YouTube video. The YouTube video is called Dancing Inmates of Cebu in the Philippines, and it's a production by Filipinos based in Toronto. You are still listening to the Prison Radio Show here on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we are listening to L. Jones from the book launch Abolitionist Intimacies.
So this is from a section called Interludes, and this one is called Bus Stop. Every so often when I'm waiting for the bus, a woman will come up to me smiling, and I look at her. And it's a woman I wrote with in the women's prison, Nova Institution. We always hug, laughing and beaming at each other. The human contact and joy we were forbidden when we sat together at those glass tables. When even talking too much about your lives at all, or any affection, was cause for suspicion. One time I was waiting in the visiting area for the woman to come down. And I got up and looked through the books and games and magazines on the shelves for visiting families. And I found a sheet of paper. A mother had made a list with her children of what she would do when she got out. order pizza, it said. Talk for as long as I want, with no one listening. One of the entries said, walk, not in a circle. One of the women goes into a long meditation once on the phrase on the outs, about how it can mean you're angry with someone, but then it also means what you hope for. I'll see you on the outs. On a hot summer day, I'm running up and down Citadel Hill, focused inside myself. There's construction on the road around the hill, and a woman is there holding a sign. After a few repeats, when I get to the top, she comes over to me and asks me if I used to come to know her. We chat for a minute at the top of the hill. A metaphor come to life. She has climbed this far. She made it up. This section's called Pen Boxes. By the way, when I see my friend walked into court under a portrait of the Queen in that poem, first poem I did, that's the story of Randy Riley, which runs through this book, which is a wrongful conviction of an African Nova Scotian man. So this is just one of the small sections on that. It's called Pen Boxes. Randy's pen boxes are a total nightmare. He has lots of people who love him, but we can't get it together. I mean that literally and metaphorically. People get sick. I'm in and out of town. We're just not organized. He has to keep putting in extensions. You're only allowed the 5 boxes of all your clothes, electronics, kitchen stuff, workout gear, books, music, and then nothing for the rest of your time. If you're doing life, you're supposed to wear the same stuff at the end of your sentence that you got going in. No matter how much styles change, no matter how much your body changes, no matter how worn out. When we finally get the boxes together, though, everyone has gone all in. You're allowed 2 pairs of sneakers. He has 5. Dozens of t-shirts, over a dozen jeans, all brand new. Love will always show itself, no matter how much they try to stomp it out. Of course, he can't have all of it. You have to stick to the list. But this excess is a form of resistance, too. And I'll read one last from this section. It's called Equality. When I was allowed to go into the max unit to write with the woman, we would meet in a room used for school, programs, the library, and activities. One day I'm meeting with the woman one-on-one, and we don't have enough paper. We start writing on the whiteboard in the room instead. The woman I'm writing with tells me about how she was trafficked and held in a motel room for weeks, kept naked and drugged. She finally escaped. She described running through the lobby of the motel, barely knowing where she was. The cops gave her a few $1,000 and put her on a plane back home. That was it. She told me she spent the money on drugs, and when she ran out, she robbed a pharmacy. She got 5 years, more than the men who kidnapped, raped, and abused her ever since. On the board in the room, she writes about running and about healing and hope. I tried to memorize the poem, to hold on to it before it was erased, but it's gone from me, like a shape moving indistinctly behind a heavy door. The last thing I'll read from here is, this is actually my favorite essay in the book. I'm going to read you a little excerpt. So this is from an essay called We Gon' Be Alright, and it was written at a time when I couldn't find a job, and I was in a lot of despair, and it's an essay kind of talking myself back to life. People talk about self-care, but what can that mean when the people who care most deeply for you and the ones who you love in return are the people to whom you owe your labor? It isn't a burden to do this work. Not when the trust and solidarity and profound love you build by your commitment to each other are the reward. But still, when the calls from segregation come in the evenings, it means there's no going to movies or out to dinner or even watching a whole show on Netflix. And that's the work that won't get a tenured job. That's the work that puts pain in your body and takes years off your life. But when M calls me and tells me I sound down, and I tell him I don't know if I'll have a job next year, he says, I get a welfare check every month. Let me send you that. Someone like you should never have to ask for help. Nobody else. Not the heads of departments, not the colleagues and friends. Nobody else has offered everything they have like that. This is why we answer the phone evening after evening. Desmond says to me, we may not be religious, but what we do is like a religious act. We imagine and work toward a better world, but the heaven we are trying to make is here on earth. And while we are living here and struggling, we are in hell. But heaven and hell are the same place for us.
So every day, we wake up in hell, and we have to do our best to enter heaven. We have to sacrifice for that, and we have to pay the price for that. We don't hold anything back in this world. Not savings, not our tongues that get us labeled troublemakers, not even our tears, although we push them back and get up the next morning and keep fighting on. Because someone has to buy the groceries, put the clothes in the prison boxes, pay the gas for visits. Somebody has to hold the hands in court and call the lawyer and visit the jail and take the call from the suicide cell. And when you stand in that love and solidarity and rage, you can't expect to have the bills paid. You can't expect to have the comfort of the world too. You have to make your choices. Sometimes I lie in bed and I think about the books I should have written, the papers I could have published, the poems and articles and chapters I didn't give my time to. And everyone tells me I wouldn't be lying here if I had just written those things. But then I ask myself, which life would I exchange for that book? Whose life was worth less than a chapter? And I know I wouldn't choose differently, just as nobody would choose differently. Not if you knew the life that was in front of you, that you had the power to sustain and hold. We are the living archive, I remind myself. And there is no tenured position, no degree, no qualification that can give me what is worth more than one life. It is not that I save them. It is that their trust and care sustains and nurtures me. That every day when I despair, when I don't know how I can pick up and rebuild again, when I don't know how I can fight these fights without sickening and dying from it, it is their voices that remind me over and over who I am and why I do this work. And these are my instructions to the people around me. If I die before you, make sure those who loved me and whom I loved are the people at my funeral. Scatter my ashes outside the prisons of this province so I can haunt them forever. Don't use my name for whack shit, and don't let the institutions that wouldn't love me in life take hold of me in death. If I die violently, remember that I hated prisons and honor me. I'm not imagining my death. These are my expressions of my commitment to the living, to my life and the life of others. To the sacrifice that isn't a sacrifice, but a sacrament, a blessing. And I'll read one last poem. This is the last poem. The funeral poem, Good Night Moon. This is my version. This is called Good Night Jail. In a provincial jail is a little room with a toilet and a sink and a smell of mildew. And a slit of a window with a sliver of the moon, and a radio on a shelf playing a tune, and a metal cot, and a metal slot, and a night that's either too cold or too hot, and an officer in the spot by the stairs, and three.
Good evening. You're listening to Upstage on CKUT 90.3 FM and at ckut.ca, the show about theater on the radio, from drama to musicals to burlesque to comedy and to opera and everything in between, professional, student, and community productions in and around Montreal, the island also known as Jurjage in Ganiagaha and Munayang in the Anishinaabe language, where we spell theater with an R-E at the end. I'm your host, Sarah DeA, broadcasting from CKUT Studio on University Street on Thursday, November 17th, 2022. My guests tonight include a love story thousands of years old set to music written 3.5 centuries ago, being sung this weekend at Mainline Theatre. We will meet the linguistic director of Dido and Aeneas and the work that goes along with it. Dancer and creator An Vo presents their tribute to the ghosts of the Vietnam War, a multimedia dance solo they first performed to an audience of none, except Ghosts. Baby Lift gets its Canadian premiere this month to a live audience. Anon will join me later this hour. Four women navigate worlds not meant for them, those stories told by one woman, writer and performer Penina Simone, in her new cabaret. And also we'll take a look at a show called Lila. It's a dance piece coming to Agora later this month. All that and more on Upstage tonight. And as you might have deduced, the music you can hear in the background is indeed from the opera by Purcell.